Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Synlait Milk Limited Sustainability Briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. John Penno, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
All right. Hi. Morning, everybody. John Penno here. We have, I've got Nigel Greenwood and Hamish Reid with me in support. Look, just before we begin, just to let people know that we've got both investors and media on the call, and we thought it was appropriate just to have a call at the end of the week, given the range of announcements we've made through the week. And we're happy to take questions on whatever might come along. Look, we are conscious we're towards the end of our financial year, and so there's a number of things that we won't be able to talk about, which I'm sure everyone understands. But we certainly want to make sure that there's an opportunity that everyone's nice and clear on the range of announcements we've made over the course of the week. Look, the primary focus is on the sustainability strategy that we released yesterday and the range of targets that we put out. So what I thought I might do is make some introductory remarks. Hamish might make a few follow-up remarks, and then we'll open it up for questions. If we start about, you know, let's go back to the start and think about why we're doing this. What we've seen as we've worked with customers over time, and particularly in the infant formula area that we work in, quite some time now, we've seen growing emphasis on issues of sustainability when it comes to premium customers around the world, whether that's in our B2B space where we're supplying ingredients into others, into the multinationals in particular, or whether it's where we're working with our B2B2C customers where they reach consumers with the finished products that we manufacture for them. We see growing emphasis on issues of sustainability. And we, in terms of sustainability, we see it in its broadest context. We see people concerned about the environment. We see people concerned about animal welfare. We see people concerned about people and community. And they want to work with companies who stand for the same things that they stand for as people. And with the internet and with, you know, everyone with the world in their hand through their smartphones, they want to be associated with companies who believe in the same things that they do and hold the same things that they do as important. So we've always done as much as we can. We've wanted to lead in this position in dairy in New Zealand. Our Lead with Pride program has been a key positioning piece for us. Not just as we face externally, but in the way that we go about our business. So we have always tried to make sure that our farmers are holding to the highest standards when it comes to animal welfare, when it comes to how they work in the environment, and when it comes to how they work with their people. And yesterday was simply moving that up a notch, stepping forward with that in a stronger way, incorporating some commitments around climate change into those commitments on farm, backing that with a series of commitments within our manufacturing processes so that we can be, you know, so that we can be absolutely proud of the way that we are operating our manufacturing and supply chain, as well as the way that the milk is produced on farm. And doing it in a way that, I guess, calls for significant change, not just in our organisation, but across the industry. Look, we don't just see these things as things that we need to do because they're good things to do for the planet. We see them as good things to do for business. And at the conference yesterday, we had a key customer, Danone, who we have a deep and growing relationship with, who have who see the world in exactly the same way as we do, standing side by side, you know, congratulating us on on the commitments we were making, and committing alongside us that you know, this is going to deepen the relationship, and they and we see it turning into helping us commercially, because ultimately there's a group of customers out there, consumers out there, who are happy to put their hands in their pockets and pull out a bigger note for products that stand for the things that they stand in, and from companies that believe in the same things that they do. So those commitments started on farm. A 35% reduction in greenhouse gases from our farming base, that's across the base over the next 10 years. That was backed within the factory with a commitment to never put in another coal-fired boiler. The boiler that we need for our advanced liquids plant will be an electrode boiler rather than a coal boiler, which allows us to draw energy from the national grid for the production of thermal energy in our manufacturing processes. And because the New Zealand electricity is a very high proportion of is renewable, that is a much more sustainable way to use energy than putting in another coal-fired or fossil fuel-fired boiler. So we're very pleased with that decision and to be leading the way there. And then further than that, looking to use technology and capital wherever we can to reduce the reliance that we have on coal. And while, let me reassure you, that while I'm sure everyone will agree these are good things to be doing and this is the way the future will be, the way that we look at it, when you take into account the likely cost of carbon in the coming years, these are economically sensible decisions as well. That boiler will have a 20 to 30 year life, and there is no doubt that when you take into account the projections that are around carbon cost at the moment, work it back through New Zealand's likely electricity cost changes over time, that is going to be a sound economic decision for us. And that's the basis that we've made, put this whole program together. So it is very much future-focused. It's very much focused on what we believe our consumers want and what we'll be financially rewarded for through those supply chains. But pragmatically, we've made sure that the capital that we're going to need to commit over the coming decade as we follow through this strategy is going to be rewarded in its own right. Look, the final thing I'd put across all of this is that this gives us the opportunity to learn as a firm. This gives our people the opportunity to learn from new technology, and that will enable and ensure that as the standard continues to move and change, we can remain right at the innovative end of the production systems that are used for producing food for the world's leading consumers. That's what this is all about. Look, we are pleased to have got here. These are not things that, hopefully you can see from the way we've been talking about it during the week, these are not things that we've just dreamed up and set ambitious targets without doing the work in behind to make sure that they are sound business decisions as well as being good for the planet. So I'll leave it there. I'd invite Hamish to make any comments that you might like to make. Hamish, we introduced to you over the last 12 months as Director of Sustainability and Brand. He's been the driving force in terms of making sure that we're thinking about these things in the right way. But it's a whole team approach. As you can see, this is called on all parts of the business to get behind this and to figure out the best way forward. And this is something that the whole business is committed to. But certainly, Hamish has played a special role in our team to help move us to the way that we're thinking about these things today. So Hamish, any comments you'd like to make before we pass the questions?
Thanks, John. Just very briefly, I'd say that we have been listening to the big emergent trends going on in the world around us, and we feel the economic, social and environmental imperatives for acting. We've taken a really calculated approach to setting these targets. And we're doing it because we deeply care about people, communities and land, and we think as a nimble, entrepreneurial, relatively small business, we can make a big play that will set an opportunity for the business world to embrace and hopefully to follow our lead, and we're really looking forward to that that journey ahead. I want to reiterate that we're not doing this because we want to be heroes. We're doing it because we genuinely care and we want to make a difference.
All right. Thanks, Hamish. Anything you want to add, Nigel, before we open it up?
Not from me. No.
All right. Then let's turn it over and see if there are any questions there.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. We will now pause briefly to allow questioners to enter the queue. Your first question comes from Veronica Meduna from Freelance Media. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. It's a question possibly for Hamish. Just on more specifics on reducing methane, that's often regarded as the hardest thing to actually bring down emissions. So I'd be curious to hear what you hope to do in that space to bring methane emissions down.
Sure. Methane is about 60% of our on-farm impact, and I know there's a lot of media attention around methane being a short-lived gas and perhaps not being the priority of the other two major gases, nitrous oxide and carbon dioxide. But we think as a minimum, methane should be contained and in the best case, reduced. So that's why we've set a really strong target to reduce methane. How are we going to go about doing that? Well, there's a really productive symbiotic relationship between nitrous oxide reductions, which we've proven to be able to reduce on our best case farms. And we're planning this practice out to the remainder of the farms that haven't yet taken up that technology or that best practice. And that will result in some gains across methane. But also we're looking at future technologies which are emerging, which are developing in Europe, which we're hoping to be the first to roll out in the Southern Hemisphere. So we're working with companies in Europe and we're hoping to bring that technology to New Zealand, which will result in a significant reduction in methane production in the rumen and our animals.
Are you thinking inhibitors there?
A technology which is broadly publicly released yet. It's been developed by an organisation in the Netherlands, and it's fed to animals in a feedstock, and they've got evidence over many years of testing to show that it's going to result in a 30 to 60% methane reduction in rumen and animals, and they've got lots of peer-reviewed papers and evidence that is absolutely possible. It has been designed for the barn-fed farming system in Europe, so it's a bit of an experiment for New Zealand, but the product has been tested on test farms here, and they're getting really good results. So we're looking forward to being one of their early commercial partners to pioneer this new product in our farming system.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Luke Mills from Craigs Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, team. Just two quick questions from me, if I may. Just on the economics of the increased premiums for your Lead with Pride program, do you see any potential offsets in the increased cost, I guess, they're in the relative efficiency of, say, Dunn's Handle plant versus the NZ Farmgate milk price, or an ability to potentially pass through premiums to customers that way?
Yeah, John here, Luke. If you look backwards to when we first put in our Lead with Pride program, we were confident that it would help us deliver extra revenue through premiums, because we believed we would get relationships with premium customers, and B, because it would underpin work we were doing in high-value products like our infant formula portfolio. We think that it has been, when we talk to our customers, when we look at what's happened over those 5 years since we put the program in place, we're absolutely convinced that it is part of that process. So looking forward, we see, in terms of the economic gain for the organisation, we see we certainly are comfortable that the premiums will be more than covered by additional premiums we're able to attract or gain from working with our customers moving with them faster into higher value products. We had Danone at the meeting yesterday talking about the deepening relationship between the two companies and the importance of this approach in terms of that. And I can assure you that the relationship with Danone is economically, is a great relationship economically for both parties. And ultimately, you know, they are able to, you know, Danone's one of the highest returning dairy companies in the world when it comes to returns per unit of milk. And a big part of that is that they are tapping into that that leading group of consumers who are prepared to pay more. And so if you're part of creating the value, we're absolutely confident that that value will move down through the value chain and we'll enjoy our share of that, and indeed be able to pass on a share of that through to the farmers who are operating in a new way and in better ways to create more value. That's always been our model, set up value chains in a way that you know, helps everybody along the chain enjoy better economic reward for the contribution they're making. We're confident that we will get our share of that, and we're confident that, that the extra returns we're passing back to the farmers to encourage the right behaviour will also happen through time. We've seen it with Lead With Pride so far. We've certainly been talking to our customers about this, and we're confident that that'll continue into the future.
Cool, perfect, thanks. And then just final question, just on your new Pōkeno site, do you expect to be able to switch your dryers away from coal? Like, what's your current thinking there?
Yeah, so part of the attraction of the Pōkeno site was that we can get access to gas there. Gas is has about one third the methane. The greenhouse gas emissions as a coal operation does. So so base level are better. Look, we have investigated whether or not we could have started with electro boilers at Pōkeno, but the supply of electricity isn't quite good enough there right at the moment. We're working with ECA to see if that might be an option next time we put up another boiler. So boiler one will be gas. We'll never put in coal on that site. In fact, yesterday we committed to not putting up coal anywhere, including Dunsandel, which is why we've moved to electrode boiler number one at Dunsandel already. But for future expansion and Pōkeno, we'll wait and see where we get to. We would like to move away from gas if possible, but there's some engineering work to do to see if that's viable.
Cool, great. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Ma from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Just a quick one on the emission trading scheme. I think David Parker has been talking about how he thinks 5% of agricultural emissions will come in initially. My question is, what's your kind of view on that in terms of when that's likely to come in and where that 5% could grow to over time?
It's a good question, Nick. And I guess in some ways we haven't necessarily taken a view over that. We haven't taken into account what might happen in terms of agriculture's inclusion in these sorts of schemes, other than to consider it inevitable. 50% of New Zealand's greenhouse gases come from farming systems, and so to meet our Paris commitments without actually bringing that in and encouraging farmers toward a more efficient future when it comes to greenhouse gases, we think is unlikely. The other thing that we think is likely is the cost of carbon is going to go up. I don't think there's any secret about that. If you look at the New Zealand Productivity Commission's review, and look at the price of carbon that they believe is possible over the next 5 to 10 years, all businesses should be taking this into account in their decision making right now. I go back to that decision of our coal-fired boiler, the electrode boiler rather than coal. These pieces of plant have 20 to 30 year lives. I don't think anybody would say that the cost of carbon is not going to become substantial over that time. Whatever mechanism there is to put that into place, whether it's a trading scheme or some other form of taxation of carbon emissions, that's going to happen during the life of these plants. So that's there. And of course, on farm, while it's uncertain as to what's going to happen, again, there is, I don't think anybody's in any doubt that at some point reasonably soon we're going to see agriculture included in some way. And once that starts, I'm sure everyone will begin expecting farmers to meet more and more of that cost. And so this, what we're doing here is that we're taking that on, we're working with the farmers, And we're trying to work with them in ways that do not necessarily just put costs on their business. With the work that we've done over the last 12 months, we're absolutely convinced that there's lots of things that they can do to not increase costs, but increase efficiency. It's important that we point to the fact that our measures and targets are on an efficiency basis, so per unit of product or per unit of milk, that we're measuring these targets. We think that's the right measure because ultimately the world's consuming dairy or it's consuming product, and it's the emission per unit of product that really counts. So that's where our targets are set. We think there's lots of things that farmers can do to bring down emissions per unit of product they're producing that actually lead to greater profitability and efficiency on farm anyway.
Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Ari Decker from First NZ Capital. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Yeah, just following on with the cost dynamic on farm, can you just sort of give a little bit of colour in terms of the sizing of the premiums this time round? You know, they have been upscaled. Is that based on you know, work you've done that kind of indicates that at that sort of point it'll be economically beneficial, and increase? I mean, you've had success clearly with lead with pride already, but that it'll make it much more compelling for pretty much all your farmers to move this way because the premiums are sort of at a level where they'll actually be net better off.
Look, the Lead with Pride program has been designed so that they're better off whether or not we give them a premium or not. And the premiums have been very small up until this point. You know, they've been in the order of 6 cents a kilo of milk solids for most people. So they, while it's an incentive, they're not doing it for financial gain in terms of the incentive based around milk. It's a very small component of their milk revenue. We are increasing that, but if you stand back from it, it still remains small. There's several things they need to do as well as becoming certified to gain all of it. The more important thing, and this is coming off the back of our farmers conference yesterday when we released this, talked about it, and then I guess spent the evening chatting it through with a number of farmers. The overwhelming response from the farmers was, the payments, we're not going to do it for the payment. It's still reasonably small. However, we understand we need to do this. We want to, and what they really like about it is it provides a framework for them to work through these issues in a sensible way. They're very pragmatic people. So if what we're doing is giving them a path to walk down towards these targets, and what we're finding is that they're only too happy to get on that path and walk along it. With the financial, we think it's more an issue of fairness, that as they do that, they are creating more value along the value chain. We're seeing that at the consumer and customer end, and so we're passing back a share of that value that's been created to encourage them to continue on that journey. The way that we're positioning ourselves as a company to be right at the front end of the premium products, the premium markets, the premium categories, this is becoming just an absolutely essential part of those market dynamics. Having our farmers right on board and sharing in that value creation along the supply chain is part of what we're about. It's not a perfect science because we don't quite know how quickly they're going to come on board. We don't know quite quickly how quickly we're going to be able to build premiums. But it's, as we stand back and look at it, we think it's fair. We think it's good for everybody along the supply chain. We will do well out of it financially as we have been already. We want them to share in some of that as well.
Sure. And then thanks, John. And just one other question. There have been a couple of announcements in the last week or so. Just with regards to the build decision at Pokeno, clearly that is, you know, a pretty confident statement from you guys in terms of the demand outlook for your products. could you just give us a bit of an indicator, bit of an update to the extent you can on just, I guess, thinking more around, you know, the nutritional side of it, you know, some tangible examples of you know, where you're going with some of that demand, any new sort of supply agreements that are material, or if not, you know, sort of when we might expect, you know, some further details on that?
Well, yeah, good question, Ari. Look, we'd point to two, let's point to three things, I guess. You are right, that the decision to go ahead with that plant is one based in our view of future demand. It takes 2 or 3 years to get these things up and rolling. We've been working on it for some time. And I guess what you saw us do was make a choice to push ahead and build that plant immediately rather than wait a further 12 months. Earlier we'd signal we weren't sure when we were going to go. Look, at a very high level, we have growing confidence that the economic model that we have when it comes to manufacturing nutritional products is very sound. We're growing in confidence that we're able to produce top quality products, world leading quality products, and get them into the world market at a very cost competitive level. That's leading to good margins on our end, and it's putting our customers in a very competitive position. So that's that, as you would expect, that then drives volume. Over the last 12 months, you've seen us refresh agreements with our Chinese customers, so this is for IF, what we call IFC, our canned infant formula business. So we've refreshed the agreements with Bright Dairy, we've refreshed agreements with New Hope. We've been working through the regulatory processes on those two, and we expect, but we do now believe that the you know, we're very close to getting the ICARA brand registration through. We're not quite there yet, but, you know, we're working away with them and we believe that's close. And again, the product into the United States that we've been working on for some time, working through the FDA, that is also close. And of course, the relationship that we have with A2 continues to deepen as that product develops and grows and we continue to hold exclusivity into the ANZ and China market. The piece that you don't see is the business development that's underway, because we only announce when things are done. But what we are pointing to is a very large step up in technical development, NPD and R&D over the last few years. And that's happened in response to our growing confidence that our products are top quality and that we're able to get them into the consumer markets at very good pricing. Cost structures, giving our customers advantages. So in the coming year, we'll be spending somewhere around $15 million on R&D. And as you can imagine, that is all near market R&D, and is filling a pipeline of future demand with existing customers and new customers, and our continued building of plant and equipment. And the team, you know, we see the big announcements around plant and equipment, but the R&D facilities that we have in Palmerston North and the arrangements that we've come to there, the increase in capability that we're building around new product development and technical development and business development over the last 2 or 3 years, we're very confident it's going to lead to strong growth in demand.
Thank you.
And of course, Ari, we'll make the announcement, the tangible announcements as we can.
Yeah, no, great, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up from Nick Ma. Please go ahead.
Hey, sorry, just one more on the kind of emission trading side of it. From what we understand, it's levied at a processor level. What's your kind of thinking on, you know, if it is implemented and levied that way, whether or not the kind of milk price manual is clear about whether or not that has to be passed on to farmers or whether or not that can be included in the milk price, and hence, you know, how it affects relative competitiveness of payout and everything like that?
Look, ultimately, we see it as a nil-sum game. Whether it's passed directly to farmers or whether it's included in the milk price, actually it'll be the same for all farmers and therefore all dairy companies. We see that the administration through the manufacturing companies is just as a matter of convenience, really. It's it's a sensible way of administrating such a structure if one was to be put in place. We see the same sort of structure for the industry good levy, for example, that is administered through the dairy companies. There's some water to go under the bridge before we determine how it's going to be done, but I don't think it's going to change. I don't think it would be done in a way that allowed competitive advantage to one player over another. That's not the objective. If there was any of that sort of thing going on, I'm sure the government would make whatever, you know, would do the sensible things to make sure it wasn't being gamed like that. That's not their objective. Their objective is to make sure that the incentives are in place to get the right sort of behaviour across the supply chain, and we're supportive of that, and we're certainly getting ourselves ready for it.
Thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I will now hand back to Mr. Penno for closing remarks.
All right. Well, look, thanks everyone for coming on board and gaining a deeper understanding. There was a lot in yesterday's announcements, and as you get further into it, we're happy to answer questions. But the most important thing is, you know, we're not, you know, we want to just get on with things now, and are happy to be, you know, known for what we do in this space rather than the things we're talking about, because it's only that that's going to lead to change. So we're excited about it, and thanks for your support.